All right, we're here at session 8.
Today we're going to be talking about something that you'll likely face as a deacon as you seek to extend the mercy of Jesus Christ to your church members and to the community. And then we looked at, you know, can it go bigger and bigger and bigger than that to eventually the world? There are some dangers that you should be aware of as far as yourself and the people that you're helping. And so today we're going to be looking, first of all, at this reality that helping others can be bad for you.
Yeah, and this is kind of an extension. Even last time we talked about the boundaries and the importance of it. Kind of an extension on this. Helping others can be bad for you.
Right. One, you know, certainly bad for you that if you let people in that are taking, are draining you, are the very draining people, that can be bad for you. But there's another thing that helping others can make you feel really good. And you can develop what some people refer to the God complex.
I've definitely heard of that one.
In other words, you just feel so good that you've been an agent of God's help that, you seek to keep things on that level of
helping. Right, you want to be able to still keep helping them.
And the converse is that all the studies that are done by people who are experiencing financial difficulties or addictions or that sort of thing is shame. They feel shame. And, I've got a good friend who's an alcoholic. He's been free now for many, many years. But he just talked about how when he came to Christ, marvelously and miraculously, as sometimes happens, sometimes you hear these stories, and his story was just one of those that God was reaching out to you this day.
Yeah.
His car died in I'll tell it shortly. His car died in a blizzard, and so he ended up the only light on. It was early in the morning. He was on the way to a rescue mission to try to get a breakfast, some kind of meal. He spent the night in his car, and he lost his wife. They divorced him. His house is gone. Everything's gone, and he ends up the only light that's on in this little town that he walks to. Is the post office, and he comes to the back door and pounds on it. This woman lets him in and says, "Wow, you really were bad."
Yeah.
And hands him a book that was simply titled God's Promises and said, "You need this more than I do." And so that started him on a path that led to faith in Jesus Christ, and today he's on staff in a church in this area. But it all started with somebody bold enough.
Yeah.
But when you talk to him, he talks about the incredible shame of being weak in the face of that addiction. So it can be God complex for you that you feel like I'm really something and pride starts bubbling up, or shame for those you help. Now, many years ago now, about 10 years ago, this book came out, When Helping Hurts, How to Alleviate Poverty Without Hurting the Poor and Yourself. It's become a classic. It is still being produced because it pointed out these two aspects of that power of when we're trying to make a difference. And this is particularly, it can happen within your church, but particularly if you're in the community or if you're in the world. You know, last church I was part of had an active ministry in Honduras where we'd go down. The goal was to provide clean water and provide latrines because, the sanitation was considered an issue, health issue, and replace stoves in their houses because they found that the wood stoves, people would use those in their houses and as a result would develop emphysema and all this other stuff. And so that was part of our ministry, but became aware in that process that it's possible for this to be a hurting thing, not a helping thing. So that's what this book addresses. The authors describe this process, that first of all, relief. And that's mostly where you're going to get engaged as a deacon, that something happens, you'll notice the lightning strike there, it's not real close, but something happens that brings into a person's life. And if somebody's hungry, you can't have a discussion with them about their need to change. You got to feed them.
Right. There's got to be the initial relief and help.
Yeah. So this is part of, but we can't stop there, or we won't really help them. That our goal is for freedom for people, for development. And so then there's a stage two that you can do relief for a while, but it's got to start rehabilitation somewhere. Now, I'm not just trying to change this person's food intake for today, but I'm trying to change their life in the name of Jesus. Help them, help Jesus change their life. And so we've got to have a process of rehabilitation. And this can be in your own church, that you're dealing with somebody and that they are just these people who are chronically needing help, chronically needing relief. That you start thinking bigger and say, okay,
how can we begin the rehabilitation process?
How can we set this person on a new trajectory in their life? And so we want to move them to rehabilitation. But then development is for, you know, the bigger issues. This whole area is hungry, and we've got to come in and help farmers figure out how to work within a drought and plant drought-resistant crops, and that there's a development. Microloans for people and businesses is a huge help in the world right now, that set people up to be succeeding, and et cetera. Now, here's the challenge for you as a deacon, and that is the helper defaults to relief rather than relationship. In other words, it's normal for us to say, well, I got to meet this immediate need. I spent a year and a half as an interim pastor in an inner city church, and I all of a sudden I became aware of all these beggars by the exits of freeways, you know. And I said, I got to do something to help these people. And so I went to the dollar store near us, and I, you know, stocked up on some things of peanuts and drink. Mm-hmm. And so I'd come and I'd hand that to them. That was nice. It helped alleviate my guilt, and provided some food for them.
Yeah.
But it didn't change their situation at all.
Right. It was just a relief, nice-y thing.
It's a nice thing. And then I can get the God complex around. Look what I've done.
Such a nice person.
Yes, right. But, you know, if I'm thinking as a deacon, and this is an issue in my town, I've got to start thinking, okay, what's going to start rehabilitation going? Mm-hmm. And you know, there are agencies that are in your city, in your town, most likely, that will be helping regardless of the situation. But the point here is that we're so easy. It's so easy to hand a bag out the door to somebody who's needed. It's so easy to bring a meal to somebody who's hungry. It's so easy to bring food to an agency that needs food. And all of those things are good and necessary, but they really don't cost us anything. Change begins to happen when it's in the context of a relationship.
Which relationships are lots of work.
Right. And so if I were to get serious about it, you know, I probably would have parked my car and gone and met the person and said, hey, you know, I know of a ministry just down the road. I think of that when I bring my grandkids to school a couple of times a week. And sometimes at the corner where we get off the freeway, there's a guy there. And I know there's a place just down the street that ministers to people. Who are homeless, but I haven't yet taken that risk of saying, hey, you know, I'm who I am, let's get to know each other. So there's a default to relief rather than relationship, but it's relationship that's going to begin rehabilitation in a person's life. So how do you do that? You need to involve the church. In other words, you need to do with the person. And what are they bringing? We'll talk about that a little more in just a little bit. In the intro to the book, one of the authors tells a story of being in a town, and he's there to build a relief kind of setting, a relief kind of situation. And the person, who actually was a witch, and she'd gotten a throat infection, she'd gotten a throat issue, and so somebody in the village she encouraged to cut out her tonsils with a shearing knife. Anyway, so lo and behold, she needed antibiotics, right? Only a few bucks where they were working. I think it was in Thailand. And so he shelled out the few bucks. He was in that area for a period of time doing some training. And it was later he realized there's a church just down the street that could provide long-term care for that person that maybe could help set her free from her involvement to the enemy. And he said, I realized in retrospect that I blew it.
Right. Had an opportunity to connect her with the community that night.
Yeah, and so, you know, when you're thinking about, as a deacon, and you're thinking within your community, what are the needs, look for ministries, or seek to develop them, if you've got a really courageous group of deacons and leaders in your church, to develop ministries that will put people together with those people in need. And, Alcoholics Anonymous started with two guys were alcoholics, and they decided to help each other since there wasn't anybody around helping them. And so they developed the system that is used around the world now of helping each other break that addiction to alcohol in the name of Jesus. And that's what's needed in your area. Now, you know, in our area, wow, we are blessed in this area. Goodness gracious. And what's really cool is some of the stories that come into Christian Leaders Institute about people who take the training to get here and start ministries.
That is huge. And that's where we even have all these soul centers now popping up everywhere where, you know, we call it soul centers because it's all about whether they're doing a coaching ministry or it is more of a relief type of feeding or whatever it is, they are doing that. They found a need in their community. They've put the training into practice and they're living it.
Yeah. So promo again for Christian Leaders Institute. So we need to involve the church, we need to involve God's people, we need to have people in relationship, and that may be you as a deacon, or it may be people that you recruit, or it may be the ministries that you turn to. But to remember that the goal is wholeness and self-sufficiency, not just the relief. We want rehabilitation and then development of ministry.
Right.
Now, having said that, I do want to talk just a little bit about a process that's called asset-based community development. The church I serve is really, the last church I served was really good about coming in and meeting the immediate need. So, really good at relief. So, they had several different ministries and continue to do that today. In fact, I had a conversation with one of the leaders of ministry. They have a bed ministry where this year they're providing 200 beds to various homes because we found out years ago that if a child does not have a bed that meets federal standards, Child Protective Services can take a child out of the home. That's one of the reasons. So kids sleeping on mattresses, on couches, etc. And so they said, we can do this. A couple of the engineers got to develop. It's incredible to watch them work because it's an assembly line. And so this year it'll be over 200 beds that are going out into the community. And when they go and bring a bed, they give, you know, they don't just bring the bed. They set it up. They pray with the people. They provide bedding and, you know, blessings on you. And one of the men that is involved with this has a gift of evangelism. He tries to be going along, and if the opportunity is there to lead somebody to the Lord. But nothing after that. And so one of the leaders caught me 2 weeks ago after church. He says, you know what? He said, I've been thinking we're stopping short. Yeah. He says, we don't go back. We don't try to solve the big problems that got them where they were.
Right.
And so says, he's going to start praying. In fact, I'm meeting with a group this weekend to talk about what could that look like and what kind of person is needed. But to
the rehabilitation begin beyond just the relief?
Right. And, there are ministries, asset-based community development, say, let's look at a community and say, okay, where is an area that needs change?
Mm-hmm.
Particularly where poverty exists. And it's easy to come in. You know, in our area, it's two trailer parks in this area, mobile home parks where people are living, below the level of poverty in our area. So how do you make a change in those situations? So this is a brief intro to asset-based community systems. When God created the world, He created it with economic systems, political systems, social system, religious system, and everybody's blessed if everything's working right. But what happened with the fall is that all of that got twisted, damaged, and as a result, there are places that need not just relief. There are a lot of places that need relief and people who need relief, but they need development. And it's called asset-based community development. Now, here are some of the principles they work on. That everyone has gifts. And so when we're looking at changing a system, we got to start the fact that everybody, doesn't matter who they are, has, if God's in them, they've got some abilities, they've got some resources. Relationships build a community. How do we create relationships? You know, I met with one of the people who's written books on this subject once because we were looking at an area in our community that we wanted to bring change to. And, I just looked at him. He's living in a very poor area of Holland, Michigan. And he kind of semi-retired and, as a result, moved into this community. And it's poor. The old house needed fixing up. And he started fixing up. But he didn't just start moving in and fixing up his house. He started going to all the neighbors. And so, what's the major problems in this community? And so they started identifying some, and they started helping each other fix up their houses and take care of things. And they started, okay, you know, this person's in need of food, or they lost their job, and it was building relationships that built the community, and the citizens are at the core of that. Leaders started involving
other people who had gifts.
Not just him coming in and saying, okay,
I'm going to fix everything here.
And those of us with God complex would love to do that. People in their communities, principle, always care about something. And they need motivation to act. They need people who will listen to them, asking questions rather than giving answers. And they need ministry that goes from the inside out, not the outside in. The outside in is, okay, this community's got problems, we're going to fix it. We've got some massive events that were done back in the 1960s in the U.S. with housing stuff where we created new housing projects and then put people in them and didn't change the system that they came from. And as a result, they have a very negative connotation when you talk about the projects in a lot of communities. And institutions often aren't equipped. They've reached their limit. So institutions have to become servants. And, here's the end the end story. Is okay, so local institutions connect with churches and businesses and parks and individuals and young people in the community and schools and et cetera, that with all of this, there are resources that can be applied to change communities. And it's fascinating because every time I run into this guy, you know, he's got some new story about the community's changing. And, a lot of crime in that area, so they worked with the local law enforcement to how can they provide citizen help for those who are able. They just changed the whole idea of the community. And I think of that. We live in Michigan, and I've been a Detroit Lions fan for years and years and years, and they were perennial losers. They're the only team in the NFL that has never gone to the Super Bowl. Right? They are this year because of coach prophecy. But a coach came along who believed in his players, began to get new players in that would help, and they developed a new attitude. Well, in the community, what my friend is at working, there are signs up that you're now entering this community because it's a beautiful, thriving community, and it started with him just going door to door saying,
building a relationship.
What can we do about it?
Right.
What do you have that can contribute to the change around here? And it's happening. It's happening in a variety of places. And So when you as a deacon look at right. your community, look broad, more broadly than just at the immediate
right. Make sure you don't get stuck on the relief. Make sure the rehabilitation begins. You know, and just another thing to quick mention is this idea of the asking those questions and really trying to empower people themselves. One other plug I'll make is, you know, I've seen a lot of people who have come here to CLI and they've done the coaching, even mm-hmm. if they don't want to be a coach, because the principles of coaching yeah. is you empower the person to make the changes. They commit to the goal. Mm-hmm. You're not giving someone advice. You're helping them reach within themselves because they know what they do need. They just need to kind of have that backing, that motivation, that agent of change. And I think, again, deacons could really utilize a lot of coaching to help them be that agent of rehabilitation and development mm-hmm. versus just the relief, the relief, the relief. So I just throw that out there as a thought that's come across.
Put that on your list for the future to say, hi, here's one area where I can improve myself and my skills
right.
that God can use more powerfully through me and maybe through my yeah. body of deacons to bring people to a sense of wholeness. Eventually, we want to see them all come to Jesus, mm-hmm. but bring the community in which you live to a higher place because you've been involved. And it comes through people and relationship, not just relief. So, enough.
See you next time.
See you next time.